Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Pleased to be joined today by new Phillies Assistant General Manager of Player Development, Preston Mattingly, who's been the Director of Player Development for the last two seasons. He was promoted last week and was kind enough to sit down with us for a nice long interview about the Philly system. We kind of bounce around the system a bit, talk about some of the players that played with the Blue Claws this past year, some of the bigger names around the system, guys that just wrapped up time in the Arizona Fall League, overall organizational philosophies, which I think you'll find very interesting. And then look ahead to 2024 and some players that played very well down in Clearwater that we could see here when the season opens up in 136 days, by the way, from when we sit here and record this. So a very exciting time of the year, and we want to thank Preston Mattingly for joining us on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Let's get right to it. Assistant General Manager of Player Development for the Philadelphia Phillies, Preston Mattingly. Preston Mattingly is our guest, Assistant General Manager of Player Development. Preston, first, congratulations on the well-deserved promotion.
Thank you very much.
How was the overall big picture? How did you think your second year in charge went?
I think it was a solid year. I think you're always looking to improve and get better. But I think, you know, we saw some players in the system have solid years, and some of our teams played well and got into the playoffs, didn't get over the hump, but, you know, got into the playoffs and showed some promise.
What did you learn from your first year, 2022, that you applied organizationally that kind of helped in 2023?
We shifted some stuff structure-wise. We made the coordinator, just the way geographically how our affiliates shape out with the three upper levels teams being up there in the Philly area. And then you have the Clearwater and the Complex and the DR more down in South Florida. We shifted, like we had upper level coordinators for both pitching and for hitting. It helped, like, just for travel and then being able to get eyes on our players at the affiliates.
What kind of we had Travis Hergert from the pitching side in July or late July, early August. And you know, he was talking about how you guys have a very unique maybe more unique than most system where, you know, Travis is in direct communication with guys on the big league staff. And, you know, he's overseeing everything from AAA all the way down to the DR, but in communication with everybody on the big league staff. And, you know, what about the collaborative process that you guys have top to bottom, up and down the system that seems to work for you guys?
Yeah, that's one thing I think we're really proud of. And it's the way we work together. And, like, you know, you mentioned the pitching side. I'll just talk about Brian Kaplan, who's our director of pitching. He's on the major league staff there every single day. So he's in constant communication with Travis, with Cesar Ramos, our AAA pitching coach, and honestly, all of our pitching coaches, because he really wants to implement, like, you know, his structure and the strategy we kind of put forth for our guys. He's talking daily with Travis and Mark Lowy, who was our upper level guy, just about player plans, guys, things they're doing, stuff he's seeing from a data perspective. And I think we're always working with not only the pitching coaches, but also strength conditioning, athletic trainers to get the full picture on guys on how to make improvement plans.
What's been the focus for you here now the last 2 months or so since the season wrapped?
You know, we just finished up a high performance camp down here in Clearwater, a 6-week program. A lot of our younger players, like last couple of draft classes, but plus another impactful players in the organization. Yeah, really proud of that. Just getting guys a foundation laid down for the offseason, the going into the dead period, because obviously it's new to the minor league baseball. We can't mandate players to do anything during this time. So we wanted to get them a foundation laid of, you know, for their offseason, then sit them on their way with good programs and have them do that during the dead period, then come back ready to go in January.
That is interesting. I didn't know. So that when's the dead period start?
November 17th was the last day we were allowed to work with them. And so it runs November 18th and through January 1st.
And then you'll start to get guys trickling to Clearwater in.
Yeah, we'll have
January
a second,
to early February. Yeah.
Second high performance camp that starts up, I think, January 8th.
So I wanted to start with, I guess, one of the stories last year when we talked around this time. You know, we talked about Andrew Painter and how he had, you know, really a remarkable year to finish last year in Double A at age 19. And then this year, we'll talk about another guy who had a remarkable year to pitch for four levels and the Phillies in 1 year. And that's Orion Kerkering. I saw something that, you know, the only other player that had done that in a season was Jose Contreras. And he was a, you know, Cuban signee, a little different scenario. So at what point did you think with Orion that you had something pretty special heading into this season?
Honestly, it was probably last January at actually our high performance camp. I remember sitting at a bullpen here in Clearwater, and Orion was kind of throwing his build up pin, getting ready for the season. He had been training with us all off season. And I remember, like, you know, the year prior, he was 92, 95, you know, touched maybe a 96. And you're like, oh, this guy's got a good slider. Like, it's, this is going to be a really good relief prospect. And he comes to that bullpen I'm talking about, and it was 94, 98. And I just remember looking at Travis Hergert and being like, whoa, like this, that looked just different. And like, not to mention, like, he was just commanding at an elite level. It's like, well, if he's going to command the ball elite level and the stuff's uptick the way it is, like, this guy's going to be a fast mover and chance to be special. And honestly, it played out that way. I've never seen a guy dominate the way he did in the minor leagues, and you know, and obviously pitched pretty well in the major leagues too. Yeah. So it was fun to watch. It's a credit to the kid, credit to our pitching group, credit to Brian Barber, honestly, and his scouting staff of identifying a guy that got juggled between roles at South Florida, and then we got him in a consistent relief role and saw the stuff uptick, and it was just, you know, a phenomenal year for him.
He was here with the Blue Claws on the 4th of July, so I mean it. Nobody really, I'm sure, penciled him into the Phillies bullpen in September. You know, at what point did that become a real possibility? And you're like, hey, we got to, I mean, he was ready for Reading, obviously, by that point anyway. But at what point did it's like, it's one thing to say, hey, we got to get this guy to Reading to test him. It's another thing to say, hey, we got to get this guy up because he might be on our playoff roster.
Greg, you know, you could probably blame me for this. He could have started in Double A. And I think one of the things, we started him in Clearwater.
Well, thank you then. It was fun to have him here for a couple months.
You know, just because I love the Blue Claws so much, I wanted him to pitch there and, you know, get a taste of that club and Greg Brzezinski and boys. So I brought him up there for you guys to see. And I think we're building lifelong Philly fans. So, you know, let him touch all the affiliates. But no, joking aside, he could have went straight to, honestly, any level. Just because the command and the stuff was so advanced that – it was more just getting a feel for like the new baseball and like upper level hitters and what they're going to chase, what they're not going to chase. It was more just experience for him.
Getting that new baseball in AAA, that's a big factor for you guys, right? I've heard Travis talk about that too, how, you know, you really want to have guys get at least somewhat, you know, some period of time in AAA before they make that adjustment, because that is a significant difference.
Yeah, I think we've seen just from a data perspective that stuff changes a little bit. So we want to make sure guys get a touch of that before they get to the big leagues. And it's not making adjustments at the major league level, more making it at the AAA level.
So besides Orion, I guess the story of the season in the system was that Clearwater group that you had, many of whom finished the season up here with the Blue Claws. They had a .700 winning percentage in the first half. And, you know, they talked about Pressureville, and I know I saw quotes from you where you said, you know, you told that group, specifically the 2022 draft class that was there in 2023, you know, how important they were to the future of the development system. What kind of special group was that, and how did they kind of play into the overall, you know, development season for you guys?
Yeah, I said this, and I think I did a previous interview. I honestly think, Greg, if I would have left those guys there the whole year, they would have won 100 games in the minor leagues. It was a special, special group. Just like how selfless they were. They were such a, you know, on the same page from minute one. They took after their manager, Marty Malloy, tough-minded, just played the game the right way. And honestly, but also they have a ton of talented players, right? That's another credit to Brian and his staff. Like, he did that class without, you know, losing his second round pick. And so we didn't even have access to the full draft class. And I think we hit on a lot of players, a lot of guys with great makeup who love to play or just want to get better. And they took after, you know, that. And going back to, you know, why I told those guys, you know, how special of a draft class they were, I just think we were trying to build something here that's sustainable and like establish a standard for what we're going to be about as an organization. And I think those guys, you know, were the first group, you know, with me and Brian together. So just be the group that's the leaders of the organization, whether it's, you know, for off-season camps, for the way we play. I think they did that, you know, they took that message to heart and they ran with it. And it was fun to watch, and it was a special team.
How much does Brian and his group kind of play off the overall organizational philosophies, maybe it's size, speed, athleticism, whatever, when they're looking for guys? Like, I know you're not out there scouting amateur players like he is, and he's not there developing guys day to day once they get drafted and signed. But how collaborative is the whole circle together?
Yeah, Brian and I have a great relationship. We work together. I think that's the only way to make it work in player development. I think, you know, a lot of times when things go bad, you see like the player development system looks and goes, well, it's the players we're getting. And then the scouting looks at it and says, oh, the player development screwed up our guys. I think we have to be able on the same page and identify like what we can, you know, what we value, number one, and then what we can improve, right? Like whether it's bodies, whether it's swings, whether it's, you know, stuff. I think you have to identify what you value, what you can improve as an organization, and then take those types of players. But going back to the first part of your question, like Brian's going to take the best available player at all times. That's the way it works. And like, we're not drafting to fit needs. It's more, hey, we want the best guy with the most talent. And then to me, that's the way it should be, right? And give those guys the PD system and let's get them better.
A couple of those guys came up together here, Justin Crawford and Brian Rincon, two of the more high profile guys. Certainly Justin was. Rincon under the radar, I guess, maybe not so anymore. But I think one of the things that we saw when they come up here, you know, they clearly both belonged at that higher level, and they were only 19. Rincon is, I think, a month younger than Crawford. They'll be 20 on opening day this coming season. But, you know, those two guys is kind of the two younger position player everyday types that came up here. I guess you'd have to be thrilled with both of their campaigns.
Yeah, just talking about Justin first, I think obviously like just from a statistical perspective, like he had a tremendous year, right? Like anytime you go out as a 19-year-old and hit 330 and do what he did on the bases and defensively, like I think prospects are so visible nowadays, right? Like the data they have,
yeah,
and, you know, the numbers they put up. And I think Justin, like, you know, in particular, it's like the player you see now with Justin is not the player you're going to get when he's 24, 25 years old. Like this guy impacts the ball, like the exit velocity already in like the 110 range when he really squares it. So I think it's more just like we're working on the quality of contact with him. Obviously, he's a guy with the speed he has. He gets a lot of balls in the ground, which is his profile right now. But I think as time comes, you know, in years to come, he'll be able to lift the ball and be able to hit the ball in the seats more and hit the ball in the gaps. Because obviously what you've seen when he does that, it's fun to watch. You know, any ball in the gap is almost an instant triple. And if he hits a double, he's probably going to steal third anyway. So he has a chance to really impact the game. And then Brian, you know, obviously was a guy that a little bit more unheralded out of high school, but a guy that our scouts, Brian and his staff, identified as a guy that like we thought was under the radar. And I think, you know, what he did as a 19-year-old, the at-bat quality was tremendous. Like he has such great baseball IQ defensively. You know, he's one of the better defensive shortstop I saw in the minor leagues this year. He can really throw. I think he's a really good baseball player. And I think you mentioned like under the radar, he's under the radar, I think, from like a fan perspective. But I think internally, a lot of organizations value Brian Rincon very highly. And obviously we do as well.
Well, the prospect rankings that came out after the season, he shot up on all of them. He's an amazing story. He kind of like bet on himself instead of signing out of amateur ball in Venezuela, comes to the U.S. to play high school ball, and then plays in an area in the north in Pittsburgh that, you know, is not necessarily known for producing a ton of guys, and jumps right in and has a great first full year. It's a pretty awesome story. And he's a great kid too.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's just a testament to the scouting, the system, honestly, that like, if you're a good player, they're going to find you no matter where you are.
Yeah. A guy that was here, of course, in 2022 is Mick Abel. He had a pretty solid year. He got to AAA at the end of the season. What did you see from Mick as he, you know, tries to get ready to hopefully help at the big league level at some point in 24?
Yeah, I think we were excited with Mick, and I obviously took the ball wire to wire. I think he ended up with 113, 115 innings around there,
which is the second straight year he made every start.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, took the ball wire to wire both years in a row. And I think we saw the stuff get better throughout the year. And I think some of the command stuff, as Mick continues to evolve and get stronger, I think some of that stuff's going to clean up. But, like, the pitches are there. The stuff's there. I think it's just more, like, repeating the delivery on a consistent basis. And I think once he does that, like, he'll be able to compete at the major league level and help our major league club.
I guess while we're on the subject of the starting pitching, how's Andrew Painter going with his rehab?
Yeah, everything's going smooth with rehab. Obviously, during the dead period, he'll be down in Cressy, right by his hometown. But he was here at the complex just kind of getting his rehab started. And I think, yeah, he's on track as of right now.
Yeah, an unfortunate situation, but, you know, he'll be back in
hopefully better than ever in come 2025. Just wanted to kind of touch on a couple guys that maybe were some under the radar types that came through here. And, you know, you had guys like Andrew Walling, Jack Dallas, Wesley Moore, that all started with that Clearwater group last year. They all put up big numbers. They all made it to here, and they were all key parts of helping Jersey Shore reach the postseason at the end of the 2023 season. You know, those guys are under the radar. None of them were drafted. Walling was in the draft league. Wesley Moore's story's crazy. He was ready to go back to college and then found out he wasn't eligible, rushed a workout and ended up signing. What types of development successes are these? And, how do you view players like that, moving up? What like goals for those types of players? And, is it more of a thing like, hey, we throw a bunch of guys like that out there and hopefully get a couple of them up to the higher levels of the system? Because obviously they can all pitch.
Yeah, I think all three guys are unique too. And they like one thing I would say is stuff plays. And just like take Wesley Moore, for example, like an elite changeup from a lower slot. I think the fastball play abilities is there too. And, Walling, a guy that didn't really even pitch in college, but it's a big body, left-handed, been up to 97 with short cutter in the slot.
He's nasty.
Yeah, just going back to my first comments, like stuff plays. These guys left-handed as well, those two. And then Jack Dallas, just to me, is just like the ultimate like competitor, bulldog, strike thrower, can go multiple innings, kind of a Swiss Army knife, can pitch for you in a bunch of different roles. I think you're always just looking for uniqueness when you sign these guys in free agency. You're looking for guys with different slots, different pitches. And I think Brian did a good job identifying those guys, our scouts. They found them, we signed them. And I would give a lot of credit to our strength conditioning staff. You know, a lot of those guys were here in the offseason training, getting better. And they evolved, their bodies got a lot, they changed from when they signed and they got a lot stronger. Their stuff ticked up. And I think those guys, showed really well for themselves.
Yeah. Your training staff and your strength staff, it's not just keep them healthy, but it's mold the bodies to meet certain goals. And those goals might be performance related, like exit velocity or swing velocity, that sort of thing.
Yeah, correct. I think we've always, like you mentioned, collaboration earlier. It's a big part of our organization. We're trying to work together throughout all departments. And I think strength conditioning and athletic trainers, they play a huge role in our players, right? Like their development, whether it's getting them to understand their body or keeping them on the field. And I think you mentioned it, like pushing these guys throughout the season. It's not just to maintain. We're looking to gain throughout the season and get better and stronger. So I think when you take that mentality and that mindset, you can go out there and still, compete at a high level, but also improve your game.
One of the players that I know got better throughout the course of the season was Leandro Pineda, who you guys were aggressive with in 2022, sending him here at the end of the season when he was only 19. And then he turned 20 during this past season. So still one of the younger players in the Sally League throughout the year. And he played his best baseball at the end of the season. So, it's a guy that you can always kind of tell where you place these players at a certain age, how much you like these guys. And I think I've always thought you guys really like Pineda. He's got a beautiful swing and he really made some strides.
Yeah. He had a monster second half and, he always been a good defender who can really throw. And he had he was physically mature, for his age. So we thought, challenge him and put him up there in a cold weather environment in a tough stadium to hit at times. And he showed us like, hey, even though he got to a slow start, I think he kept working and kept grinding. And he kept with Stassi there and the rest of the group. And you look up, and at the end of the year, he had a really solid year.
I gave him he's 21 now, not 20, but still he had a really good year. And he's still one of the younger players, that the Blue Claws had all season. Who wins the foot race with Crawford, Cade Fergus, and Marion Boyd?
Ooh, are we going 10 yard? Are we going
50,
down
50,
the line?
50. 50-yard dash.
I would probably say Justin Crawford. But honestly, we did the testing and some of the laser testing we did when they first signed, and they were all within 1/10 of a second of each other.
And over 50 yards?
We did it at the 30 level, but okay. They were all within 1/10. That's why I think as it extends out, I think Justin with the long strides may get him by a touch.
Yeah, but they can all fly.
We have a guy in the system too who you haven't seen yet, Avery Owusu. Who's faster than all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. I know Boyd had a really good year. I know he stayed in Clearwater the whole season. There aren't as many at bats, obviously. There's only so many at bats to go around, but you know, he had to really impress this season too.
Yeah, Mari, honestly, from the time he signed at 155 pounds, had a fractured wrist at the time, and he's up to 185 now. He's a guy that, you know, from second one, I remember seeing him on the backfield here facing Hans Kraus, actually, in a live BP setting. And as an 18-year-old kid who, you know, from Mississippi, who didn't play on the summer circuit at all times, and made contact from second one. So he's the guy that puts the ball in play. I think it was just getting physically stronger. And as he's done that, we've seen him impact the ball more. You know, he's a really good defender, but just with the way that Clearwater team worked, is he didn't get to play a ton of center field because we had Cade Fergus and Justin Crawford and Ricardo Rosario too. So that wasn't a ton of center field reps, but he showed to be a really quality defender, chance to impact the game on the bases. And we think there'll be more power in there too.
So he's a guy that I'm not going to hold you to anything, but obviously he's a guy that Blue Claws fans can expect at some point during 2024. And he'll be certainly a very exciting player. You talked about Pressureville with Clearwater and all those guys. We saw a bunch of them come up. What does that mean as an organization for you guys?
Yeah, we talk about it a lot, just like build the bully. We're, you know, when you go out there on the field, it's like, it's our game and we're trying to impact the game the way we play. We don't worry about how other teams play. It's the Phillies. And I think with the class that Brian brought in, it was a lot of guys who could really run. And I thought, you know, take advantage of that. You know, teams don't emphasize holding runners anymore. And it's like, it's a way to impact the game and change games, right? It's hitting so hard and getting on base is hard, right? Because the pitching's so good that when you do get on, if a pitcher's going to be 1-6, 1-7, 1-8 to the plate, we're just going to take the base on you. And I think we have the athletes to do that.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart, shop local, shop PC Richard & Son. Did the rules changes help there? Or you? I mean, I'm sure that was going to be your philosophy anyway.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like the lack of pickoff throws and the pitch clock, you can, if you're smart about it, you can time up the pitcher, the clock. But yeah, I don't think the three that I've mentioned there would matter if there's a pitch clock or not.
And the bases are a little bigger, but it's nothing crazy. I got to ask about one of my favorite players that we've had here, and I've been here for a while, Carlos De La Cruz, who had a tremendous season for you guys with Reading there. A guy who was a high school NDFA in 2018 from New York City and, you know, played well in the Arizona Fall League last year and then had a big year this year. And, you know, guy was super raw. He was like 6'8", probably like $170 when he signed, if that. And now he's turned into a really nice player.
Yeah, Dela's had an amazing, you know, almost a year and a half now, right? It started there in Jersey last year. Started on the development list. I don't think people forget that he was on the development list for the first month of the year, I think.
And Luis Garcia busted his wrist, and then he got activated.
Yeah, correct. I give, honestly, a lot of credit, Greg, goes to Arya Duke. He was our hitting coach there last year. He's now with the Kansas City Royals, but a guy that, like, constantly fought for Dela and said, like, hey, let's give this guy more at-bats. Let's give this guy more opportunity. And we continue to work with him, continue to invest in him. And we saw once he got his opportunity, he took off. Like, he has top-of-the-scale power. Actually, he's a better defender than people think, just because I think they see the big body out there, but he can really move long strides. He can play all three outfield spots, and like, it's top of the scale power. And yeah, I think he's still continued to get better, you know, on some of the strike zone awareness and the contact rates. We're continuing to work on that, but he's showed really well for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and he got left unprotected, so hopefully hopefully for, I guess, for his sake, he ends up on somebody's big league roster. But if hopefully he ends up back in the system next year, I know it's a tricky spot that the Phillies are in trying to win a World Series with those 40 man spots very tight. Have you woken up at 3 a.m. to watch your 9 or 10 Adelaide Giant players yet this winter, or maybe not quite yet?
Not yet, but I always watch the highlight. Tank, as you know, on the staff there in the Jersey, he's the manager over there. So he gives us constant updates. He sends us some emails with guys, and we have a system internally that we can watch all the videos. So we have all the information. So I'll go in there and watch the at-bats, or if our guys pitched, I'll watch them throw.
That's nice. Then you don't have to wake up at 3 a.m. I think you have 9 guys down there, I think, not including Tank. So yeah, it's quite the group. Who stood out so far from the 2023 draft class? I know Aiden Miller played very well in the complex, and then over with Clearwater, and now you guys try to integrate them into the Phillies way.
Honestly, like you mentioned Aiden already, like obviously he kind of speaks for himself. I think the guy that comes to mind like right away is Devin Saltamon. He's a high school kid we took out of Hawaii in the 3rd round. It's like kind of a little bit unknown when you take a high school kid from Hawaii, but sure. We saw him a little bit in the draft league there, and he played a lot of center field, but we've had him playing shortstop, and honestly, it's been really impressive. Like, and he's really physical, he's strong, he's explosive, and he's got a really clean swing. So we think if he can continue to build off that, it'll be a guy like good hit power combo and a really explosive athlete.
You had 3 teams in the postseason last year here, Clearwater and the Dominican Summer League group. I know a few of those players ended up at the end of the season coming over to the States for a little bit. I know development is the most important thing, of course, but you want to win, and the coaches want to win, and the players want to win. How do the two get tied together?
Yeah, I think, it's always a funny topic. I ask this all the time on interview questions and how, like, what percentage you put on these. I think, look, every time you compete in anything, you want to win, right? I think, but as an organization, we've kind of put it out there. Like, if you have a standard of your organization on how we do things and how we play, how we prepare, how we compete, how we go about our business, then like you always play to that standard. You're not necessarily playing to win. And obviously you play to the standard, you're going to develop. And I think that leads to winning. And so when you do the things I just mentioned, you don't have to discuss winning. It's just expected.
What's a successful season for you? Cause obviously if every team wins a title, that would be great. But I mean, how do you look at it? Like guys that advance to the next level, guys that advance to the big leagues, guys that advance farther than we kind of expected them to. Like, how do you guys sit down at the end and judge it? And I realize it's a tricky question because you have 180 players at any given time. You probably roll through more than that over the course of the season. But how do you guys sit down at the end of the year and analyze the development system over the course of a season?
Yeah, it's tough. I think one thing I'll mention one of the things we do, and it's we have a thing called manuals. It's named after Charlie Manuel. It's essentially a player plan, and we have them for every single guy in our organization. So I would say like, hey, like what I'm looking for is 100% of our players to improve throughout the year. Obviously, that's probably not going to happen. So I think internally we set a number like, hey, we want 75% of our players to improve throughout the year. And then we evaluate that, at the midpoint at the end of the year and see where we're at. And then obviously at the end of that, you're looking to see how you can be more efficient and how you can make, reach more players, and you're always trying to evolve. And I think we're looking for ways to like get to that 100%, honestly. I don't know if it's ever possible, but we're going to keep fighting to do that.
Next year, you go from 180 to 165. I'm sure I know that's not a decision that you made, or not you, but the player development departments made. That came from somebody else. You guys have to deal with it. I know it's a little trickier. Have you thought about how that will impact things over the course of the 2024 season and moving forward?
Yeah, I think honestly it impacts our complex the most, because the rosters at the affiliates, they're kind of set, and you have to have those filled, and you'll have a couple extra guys there as we did this year. But I think where it hits the most is at the complex. I think we had a bunch of guys there that were more just training and don't get into games until that mid-May time frame. But yeah, I think it cuts out there and probably gives us a lot less freedom to bring guys down to the complex and do those special projects like we did some this year and have guys work on specific things. But I think that's obviously, what was voted, and, we'll just roll with the punches and make the adjustments.
Yeah, that's all you can do. How do you think your AFL group did? I know Christian McGowan got a couple of starts down there. Gabriel Rincones had a good fall. Caleb Briggs, I think, got off to a slow start, but then finished really nicely down there. How do you think your Arizona Fall League group finished up?
Yeah, I thought we played pretty well. Yeah. Yeah, I thought we played pretty well. I'll just touch on all the guys. You know, we mentioned McGowan, who was slowed, obviously, coming back from TJ. He got to see, you guys got to see him a little bit there toward.
He looked great
in the playoffs. And we were happy for where he got to. You got the 50 innings. The stuff was really good. And then we shut him down and just to kind of get him started for his offseason for next year. Rinconas honestly showed some quality power, as you saw sometimes throughout the year there. And we think there's more to come with him. I think it's a little bit of like once he learns himself and his swing, he'll continue to get more balls into the air. He's a pretty good defender. That's what I think one thing we may have actually missed on out of the draft is like this guy's an instinctual quality defender in the outfield. He can steal bases. And then you mentioned Oliver Dunn. Honestly, we just
lost him
to Milwaukee. I'm really happy for him, right? Our acquisition team did a great job acquiring him in the minor league Rule 5. You know, it's a credit to him that he took advantage of every opportunity he got, right? He went to Reading. He was a minor league all-star. He had a great year. He goes to the fall league. He started on the taxi squad. He's a fall league all-star. I think one most improved player out there. And then, you know, is on a big league roster now, 40-man roster. So we were really happy for him. Like what a story that was. And then to continue the guys, Matt Caroon had a good year out there. And then you mentioned Ricketts. A little bit of a slow start. As you saw in Jersey, he was a little bit slow with some wrist stuff and a knee injury. Mm-hmm. But once we got him healthy, got him back behind the plate, he does what Caleb does, makes a lot of contact, good catcher behind the plate, and leads the staff.
The quote-unquote acquisition team, you know, they've added – we talked about a couple of the pitchers before, Walling, Moore, Dallas, you know, there are others. But, I mean, even on the big league level, guys like, you know, and this is a more amateur stuff, but – or amateur scouting, but like Ranger Suarez signs for $10,000. Or $20,000. Johan Rojas signs for not a lot of money. Sixto Sanchez signs for not a lot of money, turns into JT Realmuto. All those little acquisitions that you guys can develop, and you know, maybe you're not trading them all for JT Realmuto, but you know, a guy like Matt Vierling and Nick Maton get traded for Soto. So, you know, all these little things add up, and you guys have so much, you know, you have all these players at your disposal. You don't have to hit on all of them, but on the margins, if you can hit on a few of them and turn them into big league assets, I guess that's kind of what it's all about.
No question. I think like you don't get very many chances to acquire players. So when you do, to me, it's like you have to win on the margins, as you mentioned, whether it's international scouting, amateur scouting, Rule 5 draft, minor league Rule 5 draft, minor league free agency. Like to me, like the one thing I love about this organization is like every one of those departments, every one of those little things I just mentioned, we treat those like it's the Super Bowl. The people that are looking to acquire the minor league free agents, it's like, that's the Super Bowl. We have to find players here. And I think, and they've done a tremendous job finding Jeff Hoffman, Andrew Belot, like 2 years in a row, where it's like guys who are helping impact our major league team.
Yeah. Serenity Dominguez was a low budget signee a number of years ago. And there are plenty of other ones too. So before we wrap up, anybody from Clearwater that we haven't touched on that might at some point, be with the Blue Claws in 2024 that fans should kind of be ready for and keep an eye on?
Yeah, I think we're really excited. One guy I'll mention is Gene Cabrera, pitcher, right-handed pitcher down here. Came on at the very end of the year. I think was the minor league pitcher of the year for the Phillies the year before I came over.
He was.
Guy that his stuff is continuing to tick up. A slender frame guy, but it's been up to 96, has a quality changeup, and the sliders continue to get better this year as well. So he's a guy to be excited about and see next year.
I haven't seen him, but for one guy that I've one thing I've heard about Burke Goya, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing that wrong, has just a tremendous eye and plate discipline for somebody of his young age.
Yeah, young kid. Obviously, we really pushed him and put him straight from the DSL to the Florida State League. Makes a ton of contact, right? Like doesn't swing and miss at all, doesn't chase. And I think it's just, once he gets stronger, he's going to continue to hit the ball, you know, harder, impact into the gaps. But yeah, it's a great, he puts together great ABs and plays good defense too.
I know as the guys get older, they get stronger and they'll drive the ball more, but you know, do you want guys to kind of focus on making contact at a young age or drive the ball even if it comes at the expense of a couple of strikeouts, or you just kind of let them do their thing and then you make the adjustments as they get older? There's a balance there.
It kind of depends on the hitter, right? I think it's a case by case basis. Like certain guys, maybe you get out of college or high school, just come out there and make contact instantly, so you can then turn to make to, hey, let's get the ball in the air more. Let's try and hit the ball in the gap more and like take more chances to drive the ball versus a guy maybe who doesn't make quite as much contact. You're probably working, you know, from square one and trying to get them to make more contact to allow their power to play. Right. So I think it's just case by case. And it just depends who we have to what we work on.
And then last question, you have obviously this time of year doing your hiring and your staffing or whatever for the 2024 season. I know it's really tricky because a guy like Cesar Ramos goes up from Lehigh Valley to the big leagues, and that might impact 3-4 different pitching coach. You take one guy from here, now you have to fill in behind him. Without naming names or getting into any specifics, what's that whole process like for you, you know, and knowing how flexible you have to be because one change, and it might be somebody's friend gets hired in a different organization and takes a coach at Reading, and that opens up spots all over the place. You know, how flexible do you have to be, and what's this staffing process like for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a, you know, part of the PD front office, like our job is to help get our, like we talked to them about like what their goals are. And I think a lot of them have goals to being major league coaches. So like our goal is to get them to that, you know, to the reach their goal. So I think you mentioned Cesar, we're thrilled for him to go up. We've had a lot of other people in our organization that, you know, have gotten opportunities to go elsewhere and maybe like further their chances of getting to the major league. So we always support that. So I think that's the one thing that's really cool about this organization is like, you know, we always want what's best for our employees. If that means that somewhere else, like that's okay. And I think, but it does cause a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of interviews. So it makes our job as a PD front office harder, but it's something that we're really happy to do because our other staff members get opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, how many will you have? What, 4 coaches, including the manager at every affiliate, number of coordinators, you probably have how many uniformed personnel? 30, maybe more, probably more than that.
More than that. I think it's a little bit more than that. Yeah. I don't have the exact number, but I think the PD in general is around 120 people. When you count in trainers, strength coaches, mm-hmm. So you're looking at 120.
When do you hope to have everything finalized? I guess you're really never finalized, right? Because at any given time, somebody can.
Yeah. I think I know everybody likes to get those staff early. We're trying to get it to everybody. Hopefully, you know, don't hold me to this.
No, I didn't even mean it. I didn't even mean it that way. I just meant like, you know, I know it's a big process that takes a lot of time. And, you know, again, you have to be really flexible with it. I didn't mean it like that.
No problem. Yeah. I think the one thing that like is tricky for us is like, if you announce them too early, like you mentioned, then something happens, then it's like, you have to kind of shuffle the deck again.
So anyway, Preston, I appreciate a few minutes. We kept you a while. Before I let you go, though, when I heard that legendary basketball coach Bob Knight passed away, I thought of you because I know you played basketball at Lamar for Pat Knight, Bob's son. And I was wondering if Bob was around practice at all, if you had any Bob Knight stories you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah, obviously a kid growing up in Indiana, Bob Knight was like a legendary figure. And, you know, when I was at Lamar, my time there was amazing. And Pat, you mentioned, yeah, Bobby would come around for a weekend and watch practice. And we actually would set up like a stage, and he would have like a recliner on that stage, and he would have the notebook full of things we needed to work on and get better at. I do remember him during a little bit of a timeout. I had not set a quality screen, so he had gave me an earful about making sure I set my screens and how important those were to getting guys open. And it was just the attention to detail he had was amazing. And just the passion he had for basketball and helping players. Obviously he's one of the best to ever do it. So it was a treat just to be around him, you know, in a short capacity.
I had forgotten you grew up in Indiana. So yeah, he's the king of Indiana. Did you go to a lot of games when you were growing up?
I would always go to a couple every single year. Just going up the like legendary Assembly Hall, and actually at Lamar, my sophomore year, we played at Assembly Hall. Huh. I got Assembly Hall, I got Hinkle Fieldhouse, I got Indiana and Butler, my first 2 years. So it was a really cool experience, but yeah, Assembly Hall was one of those arenas you dream about playing in as an young Indiana kid. And I got to live that out. It was a really cool moment.
Fantastic. Preston, thank you so much for a few minutes. Have a great Thanksgiving. And best of luck as you build everything up towards 2024. We can't wait for it all to get going. Good luck. Thanks, and have a great holiday.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Phillies Assistant General Manager of Player Development, Preston Mattingly, for joining us here on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower costs, personal attention, and outstanding service. Call us at 732-722-5880, 732-722-5880. Learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. So that was Preston Mattingly, Phillies Assistant General Manager of Player Development. Hope you guys learned a lot from him. I especially like the parts when he talked about kind of their organizational process and structure. And I remember when he came in a couple of years ago, one of the things that they stressed was a desire to improve the communication throughout the organization. And he told you pretty much, you know, how they go about doing that and some of the processes that and changes that they implemented after his first season in 2022 into 2023, where it helped out around the organization. The group that we had at the end of the year here in Jersey Shore was just a great group of guys. They played very well. They just missed qualifying for the SAL Championship Series, really, you know, one run away, one at bat away in a couple of different instances. It didn't work out, but they have a lot of promising young players that'll be in the mix for roster spots at the beginning of 2024. Some of the guys from the end of last year and guys that'll be up from Clearwater next year. So really cool and exciting time to be a fan of the Blue Claws, an exciting time, obviously, to be a fan of the Phillies. Thanks to Preston for joining us. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a great day, everybody. Have a happy Thanksgiving with your families. We'll be back. We'll knock out a few more episodes for you over the next few weeks. And it'll be baseball before you know it. 136 days until opening night here in Shoretown. Have a great day, everybody. And thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.